The headlines: Iran says its red lines are among top priorities for its negotiating team, and the Vienna talks aimed at reviving the 2015 deal. Russia backs Iran's position in the Vienna talks, calling on the U.S. to return to the original accord. And China imposes sanctions against U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi after her visit to Taiwan, accusing her of undermining China's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Hello and welcome, everybody. Iran says it will rigorously enforce its red lines during the Vienna talks aimed at the revival of the 2015 deal. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian also underscored the country's right to enjoy the economic benefits of the accord known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. He said the Iranian negotiation team pays serious attention to this issue, as well as the country's right to safeguarding its peaceful nuclear capability, technology, and know-how. Meanwhile, the Russian foreign minister has described Iran's position on the revival of the JCPOA as absolutely legitimate.
Now, the point is that the Americans are trying to make an altered plan a subject matter of a new agreement, while the Iranians insist on the accord approved in 2015. I believe that Iran's position is absolutely legitimate. The Americans withdrew from the plan, which all the other parties and the Americans themselves had once approved. Considering that Washington tried to dismantle it, Washington should simply recall its position and return to the original accord. That is the problem now.
Lavrov said Russia's position on the revival of the JCPOA remains unchanged. He added that Moscow wants the accord to be restored to its original form that was approved by the UN Security Council with no amendments or exemptions. The JCPOA was derailed after Washington withdrew from it in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. The remaining parties have held several rounds of talks since April last year in an attempt to revive the deal. Iran's deputy foreign minister and top negotiator is currently in the Austrian capital for a new round of diplomacy. Ali Bagherikani has held talks with the European Union's coordinator Enrique Mora and Russian envoy Mikhail Ulyanov since his arrival in Austria on Thursday. We've talked to political commentator Mohammed Marandi about the ongoing talks in the Austrian capital on the revival of the JCPOA. He believes it's still too soon to be either optimistic or pessimistic about the outcome of the negotiations.
I think we should not be pessimistic, nor should we be optimistic. There has been progress. If you read between the lines from what European officials are saying, it's quite clear that they have adjusted their position on multiple issues. So that means there is progress. However, we still haven't reached the end of the negotiations. We are not quite sure. We're not sure at all whether the Europeans and the Americans, especially the Americans, will accept Iran's conditions. As I said, there is some movement on the Western side, which is a plus. But as they have been saying for a very long period of time, nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. So we're still going to have to wait a bit to see what happens.
The Kremlin urges Turkey to refrain from launching a military offensive in Syria, warning against any action that destabilizes the situation in the country. While recognizing that Turkey has legitimate concerns, the Kremlin spokesman called on Ankara not to allow any action that could jeopardize the territorial and political integrity of Syria. Dmitry Peskov noted that Syria is on the agenda of the talks between Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Turkish counterpart Recep Tayyip Erdogan. The two leaders have kicked off their meeting in Russia's Black Sea resort city of Sochi. For several months, Erdogan has threatened to launch an offensive against Kurdish militants in northern Syria. Turkey views a U.S.-backed YPG, an extension of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or the PKK, which is it has rather designated as a terrorist group. And Israel has closed its crossings with Gaza further tightening its inhumane blockade of the territory that has been in place since 2007. According to analysts, the ongoing closure of the crossings will further decrease the already low standards of living in this tiny seaside territory. Pastor Shannon has more details in this report.
The Israeli regime has sealed its crossings with the Gaza Strip since Tuesday, further exacerbating the humanitarian situation in the impoverished territory. Currently, there are two Israeli-controlled crossings into the tiny coastal territory, the Kerem Shalom commercial crossing, located on the southernmost tip of the Gaza Strip, and the Erez pedestrian crossing in northern Gaza. The crossings have been partially operating since Israel imposed a tight blockade on Gaza in 2007.
The Israel closure of the crossings for the third day has serious, severe implications on the lives of the Palestinians in Gaza Strip. We are calling on the international community for immediate actions to pressure Israel to lift the blockade in Gaza.
The impoverished coastal territory already suffers from high poverty and unemployment rates. Most Gazans also depend on handouts from international aid agencies to survive.
Closing the crossing point from the Israeli occupation, it's a collective punishment. It's part of blackmail against Palestinian people. Over 2 million people living in Gaza, they are living in the huge jail. The social and economic situation so deteriorated.
For 15 years, the Israeli regime has kept an illegal and inhumane closure on the Gaza Strip, affecting the lives of more than 2 million Palestinians and restricting their freedom of movement.
Gaza crisis, due to the Israeli continuous blockade for 15 years, suffering from serious implications on the economy, on the humanitarian conditions, the employment, food insecurity, poverty increased to unprecedented percentages.
Tel Aviv's move to shut down the crossings will further complicate living conditions in the impoverished territory. According to human rights groups, the Israeli blockade has wreaked havoc on the economy of Gaza and worsened its humanitarian conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Well, China holds the second day of its largest ever military drills around Taiwan amid rising tensions over the self-ruled island. The Chinese military says the exercises involve a conventional missile firepower assault in waters to the east of Taiwan. Taipei says Chinese fighter jets and ships crossed the median line that runs down the Taiwan Strait. It described the move as highly provocative. The drills kicked off a day after U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi concluded her trip to Taiwan. China says the war games work as countermeasures in the face of provocations by the U.S. and its allies in Taiwan. Washington, however, calls the drills a gross overreaction to Pelosi's visit. On Friday, Pelosi, in a press conference, said Washington will not allow China to isolate Taiwan.
They may try to keep Taiwan from visiting or participating in other places, but they will not isolate Taiwan by preventing us to travel there. We've had high-level visits, senators in the spring, a bipartisan way, continuing visits, and we will not allow them to isolate Taiwan.
Pelosi said Washington could continue its support for Taiwan. The House Speaker, however, said that her trip was not aimed at changing the status quo in the island. Relations between Washington and Beijing have hit a new low over Taiwan. China has responded by announcing sanctions against Pelosi, accusing her of undermining its sovereignty and territorial integrity. Beijing also said it was ending cooperation with Washington over a host of issues. Some include climate change and anti-drug efforts. China sees Taiwan as part of its territory and has already warned Washington against playing with fire, vowing to punish those who anger Beijing. The Ukraine war has changed the world order, and one of the reasons behind that is the fallout between Russia and the West. One organization says Russia's cooperation with the West is essentially now over. Russia says it would never trust the West again. The key question is, who will be left behind, or will suffer more as a result?
The war in Ukraine has created massive political and geostrategic shifts in alliances at regional and international levels. The war has now brought back the specter of the Cold War to the global scene. Russia, which is at loggerheads with the United States and its Western allies, says the era of constructive cooperation between Russia and Western countries is irrevocably over. Moscow says the end of the partnership is regardless of the result of the war in Ukraine. Regardless of the duration and outcome of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine, we can already state now that the 30-year era of generally constructive, though not problematic, cooperation with the West is irrevocably over.
Well, in politics, nothing is definite and irreversible, as we well know. Certainly, the situation is deeply affected by the events and the stanch positions of either side, particularly the Western and the Russian side. So in the near future, which means in the forthcoming months, is not envisageable a reversal of the distancing that has been signaled by both Russia and the United States and Europe on the issue of Ukraine.
The Russian official added that the current crisis has provided a unique opportunity to get rid of, quote, residual illusions. He also added that Moscow will use the crisis to go beyond the paradigm of what he described as friendly absorption, which Moscow says has been produced over and over again since 1992. It refers to a climate in which dominant powers following the collapse of the Soviet Union promised Russia to accept it as a member of advanced Western developed nations.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has said that the era of the unipolar world is world order is over. His stance is a result of the Ukraine conflict. It's also one of the reasons why Russia believes cooperation with the West is over. Putin says the flaw lies in the very idea that there is a single, albeit strong, power with a limited circle of close states, and this is why there is a new world order taking shape.
It's now a fact that the West and its allies are no longer the hegemon powers at the international stage. Following the war in Ukraine, the West imposed a raft of massive and unprecedented sanctions on Russia in a bid to weaken Moscow or to potentially make its economy collapse. The sanctions have hurt Russia's economy, but did not trigger its collapse. On the contrary, Russia's oil and gas revenues have soared over the past few months.
The Western side, with its approach, is also imposing a set of rules which are based on its own interests, although they pretend these rules to be universal. The rest of the world is instead proposing to identify shared rules which may differ in the practice according to the latitude and the cultural experience of the different societies. So this is the existential clash between the two sides.
It's now Western citizens who are paying higher gas and energy prices. The crisis has indeed negatively affected European and North American nations and their economies. It's now widely believed that the US has failed to create a united global front against Russia. The asymmetry of interests and perspectives between Washington and Moscow is unlikely to change anytime soon.
On this, we have to add the fact that the manufacturing capacity of the world has moved from the West to the East, particularly to the Far East, which is Asia. And this weakens considerably the perspectives of the West in long-term confrontation with the rest of the world.
And the latest spat between the United States and China over Taiwan is likely to further strain the relations between the Western-led bloc and the emerging counter-hegemonic alliance. Under these circumstances, emerging powers like Iran, with its vast energy sources and rising military might, can play a pivotal role in the shifting balances between the East and the West.
Muslims around the world are marking the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam. In Iran, mass mourning processions have been held to commemorate Imam Hussein's sacrifices for Islam. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Black-clad mourners beating on their chests and listening to elegies in honor of a man who lived 14 centuries ago but continues to touch the hearts of Muslims. Mass processions are underway in Iran to mark the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia imam, Imam Hussein. Iranians from all walks of life have been participating in the ceremonies to pay respect to their imam.
The love of Ashura's philosophy should be gathered and extended around the world. I believe that because it's not just a love for Muslims or specifically Shias, I believe it's a love that everyone can learn and everyone can understand, because it's not just a matter of your religion, it's a matter of a man that sacrificed everything in his path for his beliefs.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Imam Hussein was a true freedom seeker who stood against the unjust and corrupt ruler of his time, Yazid. We as Muslims remember him every year to safeguard what our Imam stood for.
Imam Hussein was the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Based on Islamic references, the Shia Imam and 72 of his companions were killed in the lunar month of Muharram in 680 AD in modern-day Iraqi city of Karbala by the forces of the second Umayyad Caliph Yazid. The asymmetrical battle was triggered after Imam Hussein refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, for he believed that the Caliph did not exercise true Islam as taught by the Prophet.
The philosophy of Imam Hussein's uprising was to expose the corruption that was entrenched in the ruling system. It was only after Yazid's troops spilled the blood of Imam Hussein when people realized Yazid's animosity toward Islam. And that set the start of the collapse of the Umayyad dynasty.
These people believe Imam Hussein's sacrifices saved Islam from distortion and manipulation by Yazid. And this is just one reason why his love hasn't died down in the hearts of Muslims after 14 centuries.
Shia Muslims never miss out on the 10-day mourning ceremonies for Imam Hussein. They say these rituals are meant to keep Imam Hussein's flag aloft and preserve his legacy for the generations to come. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
نلبيان يا حسين من زوري وشاف الراس تانيه ناديه ليش تأخر عباس.
Mournful is the earth as heaven starts to cry. Water doubts its worth as lips begin to dry. Listen to the silence. It breaks with a sad goodbye. Amid the drums of war is a mother's lullaby. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. I cry for you in pain. I cry for you. I cry for you in pain.
in the limelight.
In the United States, top leaders of the far-right extremist group, the Proud Boys, including its national chairman, Enrique Tarrio, have been charged with seditious conspiracy for plotting to storm the U.S. Capitol to obstruct the certification of Joe Biden's election win over Donald Trump on 6th of January 2021. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Hugo Lowell. The piece is titled, Proud Boy Leaders Charged with Seditious Conspiracy in 6th of January Riot. In the United States, top leaders of the far-right militia group, the Proud Boys, including its national chairman, Enrique Tarrio, have been charged with seditious conspiracy for plotting to storm the U.S. Capitol to obstruct the certification of Joe Biden's election win over Donald Trump on 6th of January 2021. The move by federal prosecutors to charge Enrique Tarrio and four other Proud Boys leaders with seditious conspiracy, in addition to previous charges of obstructing a congressional proceeding, marks a major development in the criminal investigation into the Capitol attack. In their 33-page indictment, unsealed in Washington, D.C. on Monday, the Justice Department said Enrique Tarrio and his co-defendants, Joseph Biggs, Ethan Nordine, and Zachary Rell, and Dominic Pizzola, for months used encrypted messaging apps to stop Joe Biden's certification by force. The new charges against the Proud Boys' leadership comes just days before the parallel congressional inquiry into the Capitol attack is scheduled to start televised hearings that are expected to examine, in part, Donald Trump's personal culpability in the events of 6th of January 2021. Seditious conspiracy, which is challenging to prove, requires federal prosecutors to show beyond a reasonable doubt that at least two people agreed to use force to overthrow the government or to interfere with the execution of a United States law. The new indictment is the latest involving seditious conspiracy after the Justice Department filed identical charges earlier this year against top members of the far-right militia group the Oath Keepers, including its founder, Stuart Rhodes, over the Capitol attack. A bipartisan U.S. Senate report linked seven deaths to the Capitol attack, which failed to stop certification of Joe Biden's election win. Donald Trump was impeached for inciting an insurrection, but acquitted when enough Senate Republicans stayed loyal to him. In addition, under seditious conspiracy charges, the Justice Department appeared to indicate that it has learned new information in recent weeks about the Proud Boys' plans ahead of 6th of January 2021 as a result of several significant developments. One of the Proud Boys, who was originally charged with Enrique Tarrio and the other co-defendants for obstructing a congressional proceeding, Charles Donahue, pleaded guilty in April and accepted a plea deal to cooperate with the criminal investigation into the militia group. Meanwhile, though the indictment also identified unindicted co-conspirators, Person 1 is understood to be Jeremy Bertino, and Person 2 is likely to be Aaron Wallen Walkind. Neither of those men have been charged. A third top Proud Boys leader, John Stewart, also remains uncharged. The U.S. government said in the indictment that on 20th of December 2020, Enrique Tarrio created a chat called MOSD Leaders Group, described by Tarrio as a national rally planning committee that included Nordin, Biggs, Rell, and other individuals who were not identified. Through the rest of December, the government said Proud Boys leaders used additional MOSD group chats to plan a trip to Washington, D.C. and communicate to group members that they should go to the Capitol not wearing their familiar black and yellow colors, but travel incognito instead. The government said in the indictment that on 30th and 31st of December 2020, Enrique Tarrio communicated with an individual whose identity is known only to a grand jury, who sent him a 9-page document called 1776 Returns, in reference to the year of the American independence from Britain. It laid out a plan to occupy crucial buildings on 6th of January 2021. The document broadly outlined a plan to reconnoiter and storm crucial government buildings in Washington, D.C. on 6th of January, though not the Capitol building itself, the New York Times reported earlier. Enrique Tarrio is said to have received the 1776 Returns document from one of his girlfriends, who compared the plan to storming the Winter Palace in St. Petersburg, Russia, that sparked the Russian Revolution in 1917, the New York Times reported. The indictment cited a reference to the moment in the new indictment, drawing upon what appeared to be newly uncovered text messages. After the Capitol attack ended, Bertino messaged Enrique Tarrio, 1776, to which Tarrio responded, "The Winter Palace." 3 days before the Capitol attack, a Proud Boy referred to only as Person 3 posted a voice message in the MOSD leaders group that stated the main operating theatre should be out in front of the House of Representatives, according to the indictment. That's where the vote is taking place with all of the objections, the person number 3 said, according to the indictment. Plan the operations based around the front entrance to the Capitol building. I strongly recommend you use the National Mall and not Pennsylvania Avenue. The new pieces of evidence in the latest indictment were messages that Bertino sent to Enrique Tarrio after the attack. "You know we made this happen," Bertino said, referring to the implications of obstructing Joe Biden's win. Bertino added, "They have to certify today, or it's invalid." Enrique Tarrio was not in Washington, D.C., however, on 6th of January 2021, having been ordered to leave the Capitol by a judge after being arrested the day before for burning a Black Lives Matter banner at a church during a pro-Donald Trump rally in December. But the Justice Department has said that even though Enrique Tarrio was not accused of physically taking part in the breach of the Capitol building, he led the advance planning and remained in contact with other members of the Proud Boys militia during the attack. 11 members of the Oath Keepers militia are also charged with seditious conspiracy. Lawyers for Enrique Tarrio and other 4 Proud Boys leaders have said there is no evidence they conspired to storm the Capitol building, and that the MOSD group chats and the acquisitions of tactical gear before 6th of January were measures to protect themselves in case of potential altercations.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We then send our condolences to our 12th and living Imam, Al-Hujja, Ajalallahu Ta'ala, Farajahu Sharif, and to each and every one of you, as we gather on these nights to commemorate the martyrdom and the brutality that was carried out on the family of Rasulullah, Sallallahu Alaihi Wa Alihi Wasallam. You know, it's said that on the 9th, the army of Umar ibn Sa'd came to attack the Imam. The Imam asked for one more night. For why? So that they could spend that night in ibadat to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Yeah. That is how much Hussein loved speaking to God. That is how much Hussein alayhi salam loved reciting the Quran. It is said him and his companion spent that night raki'an, sajidan, baqiyan, mustaghfiran, mutadarri'an. He says they spent that night in ruku and sujood and crying to Allah, seeking closeness to Allah. The tradition says that you could hear the whisperings on that night like the buzzing of bees coming from the camp of Imam al-Hussein. And then sometime in that evening or that night, we are told the Imam alayhi salam calls his companions together. And when he calls his companions together, he begins to praise Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And after praising God, he says, فَإِنِّي لَا أَعْلَمُ أَصْحَابًا أَوْلَى وَلَا خَيْرًا مِنْ أَصْحَابِي. He says, by God, I do not know of companions better and more loyal than my companions. And he says, I do not know a family that is more loyal and that has more concern about kinship than my family. But he says, know that tomorrow is our reckoning with the people that are there. And they are after my blood only, Hussein says. And so I lift my bay'at from you. I lift my allegiance from you. And in the darkness of the night, you can go. The Imam gave them permission. But then you know what began to happen? Abul Fadl al-Abbas stands up. I tell you, this particular scene gives me goosebumps every time. Abbas stands up with the Banu Hashim, Ali ibn al-Akbar, Qasim. And they say, Lima nafa'al? Why would we do that, Yabna Rasulullah? So that we remain after you? What good is life to remain after you, O Hussein? And then the children of Muslims stood up. Imam says to the children of Muslim, look, your father has paid his sacrifice. You are free to go. To which they replied, and what would people say at that time? That we abandoned our chief? That we abandoned our master? That we did not shoot arrows with them when arrows were coming towards him? The next day he said, we will be loyal with you, O Imam. And then Muslim ibn Awsa just stands up. Muslim says that we will stay with you, O Imam. He says, I will throw my spear at them, after which I will take out my sword and fight them. And if my sword breaks, I will pick up stones and I will throw them until I meet Allah. And then a man by the name of Sa'id bin Abdullah stands up. He says, Yabna Rasulillah, we will fight them. And if we were to die and our bodies burnt and the ashes thrown away, and if God resurrected us 70 times, he said, each time I would give my life to you, O Hussein. And one by one, Zuhair ibn Qayn, everyone stands up and gives their allegiance. It is said that the scene was so moving. Fabaka wa baku alayhi. He says they all began to cry with one another. These were not tears of sorrow, huh? These were tears of muhabba. These were tears of love. These were tears of of loyalty. And it, as this time it is said in traditions, that the Imam alayhi salam said, lift your heads to the sky. They lifted their heads to the sky, and one by one the Imam began to call their names. And he said, Muslim, that is your house in Jannah. Abbas, that is your house in Jannah. Zuhair, that is your house in Jannah. On the day of Ashura, you know, the companions were, the enemies were amazed at how can these few fight so ferociously, because they were shown their maqam in Jannah by Aba Abdullah. They were simply rushing to get there. This is that night, my brothers and sisters, huh? This is that night when mothers were preparing their children. We can imagine Zainab telling Aun and Muhammad, children, tomorrow is the day, huh? The mother of Qasim preparing Qasim, saying, Qasim, beta, tomorrow you have to fight like your father Hassan. Abbas telling his brothers, tomorrow you have to go and sacrifice your life. But you know, a thought keeps coming into my mind. I wonder if Rabab was talking to Ali ibn al-Asghar on this night. I wonder if Rabab was saying, oh my child, even you tomorrow will become shaheed. Even you will have an arrow shot at you. But it is your shahadat, ya Ali, that will win the battle for Hussein, that will turn the tide. On the day of Ashura, when there was no one left, Abbas had become shaheed. Ali ibn al-Akbar had become shaheed. Qasim had become shaheed. Imam calls out, Hal min dabbin yadhubbu an harami Rasulillah. He said, is there anyone who will come to defend the haram, the family of Rasulullah? Hal min mughithin yarjullah bi ghathatina. He said, is there any rescuer who will come and rescue us for our sake? It is said when the Imam called out in this way, tears and buka could be heard from the tents of the ladies. Imam comes to the tent of Zainab. At this time the Imam says, Nawilini waladis saghir hatta uwaddi'ahu. He says, bring me my baby. Bring me my baby so that I can bid him farewell. But I don't think Hussein meant this type of thing. Hussein, bring the baby, is brought to Hussein, but the baby is crying, the baby is thirsty, Ali ibn al-Asghar is thirsty. The Imam alayhi salam, it is said, turns towards the enemies and says, Ya Qawm, in lam tarhamuni farhamu hadha tayyib. He says, O community, if you do not have mercy upon me, O people, if you are merciless against me, then at least have mercy on this baby. My brothers and sisters, they answered Hussein's call, but not the way that we think. Think that they answered Hussein's call. It is said the Mal'oon, Hurmala, takes out an arrow and shoots that arrow that penetrates the neck of Ali ibn al-Asghar. فَوَقَعَ فِي نَحْرِهِ فَذَبَحَهُ. It landed on the neck of Ali ibn al-Asghar and slaughtered him. Wa Husayna. Hussein's heart is shattered at this point. It is said Imam alayhi salam took the blood of Ali ibn al-Asghar in his hand and threw it towards the heavens. Imam al-Baqir said, not a single drop of this blood came back on earth. And then he says, whatever happens to me is easier to bear because it is witnessed by Allah.
Allahumma ij'al mahyaya mahya Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad wa mamati mamata Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad.
Hussein, swear to Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
One anti-war group called the U.S. House Speaker's trip unnecessary, dangerous, and utterly reckless at a time when the war in Eastern Europe continues. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading Playing with Fire. Says China after Pelosi lands in Taiwan. Here's the story. Chinese warplanes took to the skies and U.S. warships were on the move on Tuesday, August 2nd, as U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi ignored warnings from Beijing, the Biden administration, and peace activists by becoming the highest-ranking American officials in 25 years to visit Taiwan. Pelosi issued a statement insisting the congressional delegation's trip to the island that most of the international community, including the United States, considers part of China, in no way contradicts U.S. adherence to the One China policy, but rather honors America's unwavering commitment to supporting Taiwan's vibrant democracy. Our visit is part of our broader trip to the Indo-Pacific, including Singapore, Malaysia, South Korea, and Japan, focused on mutual security, economic partnership, and democratic governance, the speaker claimed. She added, our discussions with Taiwan leadership will focus on reaffirming our support for our partner and our promoting shared interests, including advancing a free and open Indo-Pacific region. America's solidarity with the 23 million people of Taiwan is more important today than ever, as the world faces a choice between autocracy and democracy, Nancy Pelosi claimed. China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs decried Pelosi's visit, accusing the United States of playing with fire and warning that those who play by fire will perish by it. In a statement, the ministry said China and the United States are two major countries. The right way for them to deal with each other lies only in mutual respect, peaceful coexistence, no confrontation, and win-win cooperation. The Taiwan question is purely an internal affair of China, and no other country is entitled to act as a judge on the Taiwan question. China strongly urges the United States to stop playing the Taiwan card and using Taiwan to contain China. It should stop meddling on Taiwan and interfering in China's internal affairs. It should stop supporting and conniving at Taiwan's independence, separatist forces in any form. It should stop its acts of saying one thing but doing the opposite on the Taiwan question. It should stop distorting, obscuring, and hauling out the One China principle. It must take credible actions to observe strictly the One China principle and the provisions of the three China-U.S. joint communiques. Deliver on the five no's commitment made by U.S. leadership that is not seek a new Cold War, not seek to change China's system. The revitalization of its alliances is not against China, not support Taiwan independence, not look for conflict with China, and not go further down the wrong and dangerous path. Anti-war voices also condemned the speaker's trip. Pelosi's Taiwan visit is unnecessary, dangerous, and utterly reckless at a time when the war in Eastern Europe continues. Stop the war, UK tweeted, adding, the US is already in a proxy war with Russia, and Pelosi's visit could result in military retaliation and a dangerous cycle of escalation. Former Taiwanese Foreign Policy Planning Chief Dale G. Wenqi decried the notion that Pelosi was coming to the island to support the Taiwanese people. G. added, you Yankees want us to buy weapons from you? Are you here to support Taiwan or to provoke a war? What the hell are you doing here, Pelosi? The relationship between the mainland and Taiwan is already very tense. Supporting Taiwan? We don't need your support. Also recently, Taipei 101, the Taiwanese capital's tallest building and iconic landmark, displayed illuminated messages welcoming Pelosi and thanking her for visiting. The speaker's visit also prompted protests from the streets of Taipei to her hometown of San Francisco. Julie Tang, a retired San Francisco Superior Court judge, accused Pelosi of supporting the military-industrial complex and raising the temperature for war during a recent demonstration in the Northern California city. Tang told the San Francisco Standard, We have donated to her. We've supported her throughout these years. But we are so disappointed that what she's doing is totally against the welfare and the well-being of the community, in particular Chinese Americans. Tong added, she does not listen to us. She's going with the flow, going with pushing U.S. hegemony to contain China. For what? We don't get anything out of it. Biden administration officials had reportedly been working behind the scenes to convince Pelosi of the potential dangers of visiting Taiwan. Last month, Biden admitted that U.S. military officials believed it's not a good idea for Pelosi to visit Taiwan right now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the text of the speech delivered on June the 28th, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of the top officials and employees of the judiciary. It is true that executive officers are effective, important agents, and they have certain powers. They have opinions about people and about cases. But the judiciary must act independently and not be influenced by their views. This is also one aspect. The other side of the issue is that these same officers sometimes have expert opinions, which are based on their research. These expert opinions should not be ignored. The judiciary should use these expert opinions, whether this is the police force, in the Ministry of Intelligence, or elsewhere. The officers who are present sometimes have professional expert opinions. Pay attention to their opinions. Another issue is something that the officers often complain to us about. For example, they say that when they object, that why hasn't a certain matter been dealt with, they are told that the matter has been dealt with. They are told, we gave it to the judiciary and the judiciary didn't do anything. So they ask the judiciary why they haven't done anything. They are told that a law about this case doesn't exist. But if you do not have a law about this matter, who should write that law? You must write it. Make a bill, write it. Give it to the Parliament to approve it for you. This should not happen that an officer struggles, makes an effort, does something, and then he comes to the judiciary and is ignored by them due to the negligence of the judiciary or a lack of expertise on the part of the judge in that particular case. In such a situation, his effort will be wasted. So this is the sixth point, a comprehensive approach of the relationship between the judiciary and the officers is needed.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The seventh point I would like to make is the issue of the psychological security of the people. This is a right of the people that I said I would talk about. The people have a right to psychological security. What does psychological security mean? It means every day a rumor, a lie, or a frightening statement should not be spread to people's minds. Only newspapers were doing such things until yesterday. Now the internet is doing this too. Once in a while, every few days, or sometimes every few hours, a rumor, a lie, or something bad is said by a specific person or an unknown person, and this is published on the internet. These statements worry people and ruin their minds. Some people tell a lie, or they spread a rumor. Well, the people will no longer have psychological security in such a situation. One of the duties of the judiciary is to deal with these instances. Of course, I have heard people say that we do not have a law about this. First of all, the existing laws can be used about this. And based on these laws, the related ruling can be reached. But if you do not have a law for a certain situation, quickly make a law. Of course, sometimes the judiciary itself is the source of some of this news. Sometimes a member of the judiciary mentions something about a person or organization, and his statements affect public opinion.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.